Hello, hello. Welcome back to the Seed in Society podcast. Today, I am so excited about our guest here. We have Matthew Mayhews. He is an award-winning author and landscape architect, and he's on a mission to make the world a greener, healthier, and just like better place.
Curious about owning land, growing your own food, or building income that doesn't depend on you showing up every day? That's what I'm doing, and this is where I share exactly how. Welcome to Seed in Society. I'm Makeda Boehm, an AI strategist, homesteader, and tech sales leader turning paychecks into lasting multi-million dollar wealth. I use automation, food-producing land, and digital income streams to build real assets and long-term freedom for my family and help others do the same. If you're done trading time for survival and want to build on your own terms, you're in the right place.
I am so excited to bring you to the Seed in Society podcast, to our guests. Hi, Matthew. Thank you for joining. Let's hear a bit about you.
Thank you, Makeda. Thank you, first of all, for having me on your show. I'm very excited about it. It's amazing what you do with your podcast. And yeah, so I'm very excited to be here. Thank you.
Awesome. An award-winning author. Tell me a bit more about that. But
yes,
even before we just dive into like all your accomplishments, tell me a little bit about your background and what got you into this and what it is that you write about and talk about.
Yeah, I'll give you my backstory. So how everything happened, I grew up on a family farm. Both my brother and father are still active farmers today. And on our farm, we're in a transition to make it regenerative. So I also helped my brother with that. But actually, when I was around the age of 3 years old, I got so fascinated. Makeda, this is very interesting. Imagine a three-year-old. This is like my first thoughts were like, wow, how crazy is it that if you have a tiny little seed and you put it in the soil, it grows into a plant? Like, how on earth is that possible? Like, this was the magic that me as a three-year-old was thinking about. And then by the time I was five or six, I came back from school. I mean, we had an amazing teacher who we had like a small garden where we starting to grow our food, and our classroom was full of plants. So that's where I got like the gardening bug. And I came home and I said to my parents, I'm going to start my own garden. Can you help me out? And my parents, they are like, my father is the farmer. My mother has her own business, and they're like super busy trying to build their life, you know, from scratch. And they said like, no, we don't have time for that. Like, the farm was mostly cattle and cash crops, like bigger crops like grains. Today we're transforming it, but I kind of persisted and I said, I really want to do it. So eventually they gave me like a little piece in the back of the yard. And I started out, I had no clue. I was just like preparing my soil, and I started with radishes. And radishes, you obviously know as well, it's very easy to grow radishes. You just put a few seeds in the soil and a few weeks later you can harvest. So I thought, how hard can it be to be a gardener? And I went on and I prepared my whole garden, but then I completely failed. Like, I came back to my garden and it was overgrown by weeds. And so from that experience, and this is only later in my life, I continued my life. I studied a bachelor in landscape and garden design. I was like, I'm not feeling it. I want to do more than just create beautiful gardens. So I did a master degree in landscape architecture as an engineer degree. So then I got like more into bigger projects. And then I got into the 9 to 5. I was working in Germany at the time in a big company for landscape architecture, like big public projects. But I'm doing this job for like 6 months and it wasn't for me. Like, I became depressed. I was like, no, I can't do this. But I still did it for 2 years because that's what I had studied for. And then I quit my job and I hit the road and I traveled the world to find out all the places on the planet where people are actually doing something good for the environment, but at the same time creating a good business. Cause I was always interested in business. Actually, around the time when I was a kid, I also had my own chicken egg business. I had like 20 chicken. I was, after school, taking care of them, giving them water, food, collecting my eggs, counting them and selling them to like friends of my parents. And this was like my first business, which was a lot of fun. By the time I was 12 years old, I had saved up $2,000. And I actually bought stocks with it. Can you imagine? I learned about the stock market when I was 12 years old through my uncle. Other story. But yeah, I had this bug of like entrepreneurship. I love creating stuff. But so I traveled the world. I saw amazing places. Like I went to Indonesia, Southeast Asia, South America to see eco resorts, sustainable farms, homesteads. I volunteered. I did permaculture trainings. I really dived deep into everything that I could do. Community gardens. I actually also wrote my master thesis about it. And then I went to the Amazon rainforest because it was also my dream to like, what is the real nature, like the purest form of nature. And I went to the Amazon rainforest and there I had the deepest impression. Like if you ever have the chance to go there, it's so beautiful. It's like trees the size of apartment buildings. I saw so many animals. And at the same time, it's a very hostile environment. Like I was with a very talented guide who had worked for National Geographic. He knew everything and we were kind of safe, but still it's a dangerous environment.
Yeah.
And I got stung by a mosquito that had a disease called dengue. It's like kind of like malaria, if you ever heard of it.
Very familiar. My mother-in-law actually got dengue when she was in South America, and really? I got malaria when I lived in Ghana for a little bit.
So you're familiar with that.
And
actually that was also a tipping moment. And I think it's like Mother Nature was telling me like, hey, you've traveled enough. You have enough experience. It's time for you to do something with it. And actually from that moment on, my life went down quite a lot. I didn't have my business yet. I was kind of freelancing, surfing a lot around the world, living a good life, but Mother Nature had a different plan for me. So I became very sick. I didn't have any more money. Like I had spent it all on traveling. My girlfriend dumped me and I was like really kind of rock bottom. But from that experience, I was like, okay, why am I even here on this planet? What am I doing here? And I said, you know what? I'm going to now dedicate my life to helping other people to create beautiful gardens and actually make a business of it. Because when you're an entrepreneur, you're creating stuff for your clients, that's where you really make the difference. It's like, I believe more in entrepreneurship than NGOs and not-for-profits. They all have their place and they're important. I'm not going to say anything against it, but where does the world really change? It's through entrepreneurship. So I started my own business called Palonia Landscape Architect. So we design gardens, homesteads, farms. We're now in 4 continents. So I've really took my passion and all the knowledge that I gathered pretty much from my whole life, growing up on a farm, studying and visiting many places to now building an international business that helps people around the world how to become self-sufficient, how to create something that is beautiful yet can also be profitable. We're getting into like development as well. So like real estate development. So because there's a lot of mistakes that are made on a landscape basis that can be avoided, that actually saves money and makes the end result way more beautiful and more appealing.
Absolutely.
So yeah, that's kind of where I am. And I also synthesized all of that knowledge in my book, 12 Universal Laws of Nature, because I just had the idea what I do is between Christmas and New Year's, I take the time to set some goals for the coming year. And I think 2 or 3 years ago, I was all of a sudden writing down, oh, I'm going to write a book. I was like, okay. And then I found a mentor who helps people to write books, Raymond Aron. He's amazing in Canada. And he mentored me how to write the book. And then it became a fact, the book.
That is amazing. That's an incredible story. First of all, you sound like you lived part of my dream life, traveling around to eco tourist spots and eco resorts, which I absolutely love. Every time I travel, I try to definitely see places that are more, you know, in tune with nature. I actually went to an eco resort when I was in, Bella Lacor, Mexico, which is like the 7 color lagoons. And I definitely fell in love with that. But you also said something else that makes me feel like what I always feel like, that the universe is constantly providing and bringing people in within this ecosystem of Seed and Society, which is like NGOs, nonprofits, they absolutely have their place. I actually just recently did a board certification program. But throughout that, it actually birthed my entrepreneurship.
There you go.
It birthed this idea of if I actually want to help as much as possible, then I need to be a funder. Because yes. That is how a lot of these organizations or anything actually gets done. Mm-hmm. And if I was going to start any kind of organization, it would be a for-profit with the idea of maybe, you know, giving back to the environment more or exactly. giving back to some of my causes. But I ultimately cannot do that within the confines of being in a nonprofit or an organization that has to rely on donation and charity.
Exactly. So, I agree. And yeah. I fully agree with you. And you just made me realize something again, is that the danger of NGOs is that they are fully dependent on funds. And when exactly. economy goes down or something happens, maybe your funds run dry and all of the people that you're helping, all of a sudden it's done. And maybe you're in the middle of building a project and the funds are out and the project completely loses what you wanted to do. Whereas if you're in a business, and I always, do you know Steve Irwin? Have you heard of Steve Irwin? Do you remember?
Of course, yeah.
Oh, there you go. I always like to down refer under. To Steve Irwin because you should watch his videos and his energy is like through the roof. But he said, like, I'm put on this planet to protect wildlife. And he said, to do that, I'm going to take as much money as I can. And with all the money that I make, I'm going to buy land and I'm going to put it into conservation. And that's what he did. He built like a massive empire by building the Australia Zoo and getting on. He became like a pop star. I would think it's around the 2000s or maybe even 90s. And he, in America, he became like a big star and he made a lot of money with it. And he actually, every cent that he made, he put it into buying more land and conserving wildlife areas, which is incredible. So, see, and that's what I like about your life as well. You're in tech, you make money and then you do that to create a homestead and provide for you, your family, to have a healthy environment, because the fact is that most of our environments are polluted. So even if you're organic or you're not using chemicals, still like the atmosphere is full of chemicals. So you actively need to farm organically and do a lot of things to get rid of the pollutants. So yeah, I love what you're doing.
It's so crazy you said that, because earlier I was talking about, I did my last episode, like I said, in my homestead, and I was talking about glyphosate. And yeah. as I was looking it up, I'm like, oh, well, it's still in the rain. However, it's still a lot different than spraying something directly onto your yeah. food, which is already a chemical, versus, you know, some things you can't control what's in the atmosphere.
Exactly.
Yeah, and the Steve Irwin, I'm very familiar with that story, and even his wife, who continues through that legacy and through their conservationship and all of that. Because I'm a person who just truly believes that everything is an extension of the other. Like, you cannot, I feel like, love yourself fully and also not love the planet that you're on, or the water that you drink, or the trees that are here as well, or even the animals. It's funny because I joke that I'm not like, I don't super like pet all the animals, but I don't eat meat. So I'm like, I think I love animals more than a lot of other people. I don't hate on anyone who does. I'm a big believer in survivalism, and I've lived globally. I myself have traveled to over 10 countries. So I understand that it's very easy to point fingers when you don't see what other people have to go through just to survive. Oh, yeah. But even farther, so this is exactly what we talk about at Seed and Society. It's not an either or thing. You can have a business and you can care about the environment. You can make money, and that's not inherently bad. I do feel like a lot of homesteaders or people within this lifestyle or movement like to make things very dichotomous. Like, if you have a lot of money, then you can't be super like a good person. And I think that is absolutely untrue. Yes. I would love to hear how you, like what your advice would be to people so that they can be in their homestead, which we know growing food takes work. It is not super easy. It's not like, you know, when you type into your Google search bar and you get the answer and it's instant gratification, or you order your food and it's right there. But you have some tips and tricks that I'm super curious to know, and I know my audience is super curious to know, on how you can make your garden and your homestead not take over your life, but still produce great food and be able to run your business.
Yes, that's a great question, and I love that. Thank you for asking that. And first, before answering your question, I still want to stress out how important it is what you're saying. Like, we need more people that are extremely wealthy and that are heart-centered, because like there's a big misconception that you either are very wealthy and like kind of evil, or you're kind of poor and you're doing something good for the environment. No, we need that to bring that together, because the more wealthy people that buy land and transform it into being, it could be a wildlife center, but also a regenerative farm, because most of the land use in the world is farmland. So we need to make more sustainable, regenerative, ecological farm productions. And there's a bunch of reasons for that.
1,000,000%.
And that actually brings us to your question, which is, okay, and this is what I love about it, because when you start to work with nature instead of working against nature, it becomes so much better. And that's what I would call, you could call it, I like to call it regenerative gardening. Like, it kind of comes from regenerative.
Well.
Yeah, perfect. So you know already about it, but like I think it was birthed more in regenerative agriculture, which is you're actually looking at, and that's what I explain in my masterclass and when I coach people one-on-one. The first step for you to do is you need to understand how nature works and actually get the scientific evidence, like how has nature evolved. And then when you do that, you'll find out very soon that actually a lot of principles apply that you can use to your own advantage. And just like, I don't think we have enough time to explain everything, but just to give you like one example, and it's the biggest one that nobody dares to talk about, especially in my industry, it's about weeds. It's like, I always like to tell, like, when I say the word weeds, it's like as if I said Voldemort. Like, nobody in the landscaping business is like, oh, no, you shouldn't talk about it, because we use chemicals to get rid of weeds. And that's the big mistake. You don't need to do that. So I'm going to tell you something. So why do weeds, like, I also always say that every plant comes for a specific reason in your garden or in your farm. There's always a reason. Because plants are always trying to regenerate the soil and regenerate itself. Because where do you see in nature that weeds will come? It's a bit of a tricky question, because it's hard to know if you don't know. It's when the soil is actually bare. So in nature, it hardly ever happens. It's only when there's like a landslide or there's a wildfire and the soil is completely disturbed. That's actually Mother Nature's invention, you could say, to start regenerating the soil after it has been destroyed or disturbed. And that's when weeds come in. So we, as gardeners, if you look at conventional ways of gardening, what people do all the time, and this is just how it has evolved, people constantly scratch the soil and they till the soil and they turn around the soil. And I'm not going to say you shouldn't till your soil. Like, if you want to do potatoes and vegetables, you do have to.
I just did 2 no-till garden beds. I am a big no-till person. It's, again, I think that goes into the everything doesn't need to be instant. Yes, that is a longer-term viewpoint, but when I'm building my, I like to call it my food forest, because that is my goal. I'm thinking about it from 100 years from now, for my children and their children to be able to eat from it. And that means I need to take the long view, and everything's not going to be harvested this year, but I'm not going to till up my soil, create more weeds, kill the microorganisms in there, and cause more harm to the planet, because I need to have it now. So you're in the right place.
you nailed it there. So weeds are not necessarily a problem there. When you can define what weed that you have, you can also understand what the problem with your soil is. And then you could just let nature do its thing and it will regenerate itself. But that takes a lot of time. Like nature is not in a rush. It'll just take its time that it needs. But we as humans, we'd like to have some faster results, right? Even in Dutch, we have this saying, that a tree is, when your tree is big, you as the guy who planted it is dead. It's like a rhyme.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's true. Like, you have to wait a long time for a nice tree. That being said, it's good, like you said, you plant for the next generations.
One, by the way. Actually, yeah, wanted to take Dutch, and my college didn't offer it, so I had to do my study abroad in Rome. But yes.
Oh, wow. So cool.
Yeah.
Nice. That's amazing. But so, yeah, I think it's important to stress that understanding what the weeds you have, and then you could correct it by adding certain minerals. Mostly we work with high-quality compost that fixes most of the problems. And not just any compost. Like, either you have to make your own high-quality compost, which that's a whole science in and of itself, or you have to work with...
I've been down that rabbit hole. I did just get some mushroom compost, but I made the mistake. I should have probably spoke with you first. This was a couple weeks ago, and I also got partially topsoil. Even though my gardening mentorship said don't get topsoil, but I was like, I need to fill these garden beds yesterday, and now I'm slightly paying the price. It's slightly clay-like. It's a little bit dense, but the soil up here is kind of clay-like, so I'm working with it. But yeah, I did amend it a lot with organic worm casings and garden tone, but at the same time, it's like, we'll see what happens.
Oh, yeah. But a clay soil is very rich in minerals, and like, it's very hard to deplete a clay soil. You might have other issues with compaction and erosion. But yeah, I grew up on our family farm is like heavy, heavy clay soil. Like, it's like, when it's dry, it's like a brick.
Yeah.
And when it's wet, your boots, I remember as a kid, my boots were like 5 times the size of the boots full of clay when we had to walk the farm. It's very muddy. So, but it's very high in minerals. Yeah.
Okay. That can explain why a lot grows. So I like what you talked about, like the soil doesn't like to be bare. And in my garden mentorship, Amber, that's one of the people who run it. She's Grace Walk Farms. She says soil is modest. It doesn't like to be bare. So you put a cover crop on it or something, or nature will cover it. And what we saw here is that on my land, blackberries take over everything.
Oh, yeah.
I probably have like an acre of blackberries that we can't even fully harvest because they're thorny. They're you know, you can't get through it. And anytime I make a garden bed and we don't put something in it, the next year you have over a dozen blackberry bushes in it. So yeah
that's nature that's trying to push itself to the next succession. Like if the soil has been amended in a certain ways, or there's a lot of nitrogen probably deposits could be from surrounding areas or farms that have a lot of nitrogen. And then the best thing to do is actually to remove them and plant other varieties that are thornless. There's a lot of blackberry thornless varieties. So then you can actually harvest them, because that's one thing that I learned. Instead of like trying to get rid of the plant and planting something different, observe what's growing, figure out what other plant is in the same family and that can give you something good and that is manageable, and then plant it in the exact same location. Like, even it's called globe artichoke, right? The big ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They are family of thistles. So if you look at the flower, they actually look quite alike. Now, if you have a lot of thistles in your garden, you can say, like, I'm going to plant in that exact location. You just plant globe artichoke, and they're going to thrive, and they're actually going to improve the soil as well. So you kind of work with nature as much as you can.
Yeah. So even just from the idea of, you know, being regenerative to the earth and understanding that and making sure you protect it, how can maybe having that ethos or having that mindset also help you with being regenerative in your funds, being regenerative with your money? Like, if you think that there's a correlation.
Good questions. I think there definitely is a correlation. Like you must know it. Like when you work in your garden, you show up differently on your meetings with your, I don't know, with your clients or with team members. When you've worked in your garden, and there's even scientific proof for it, because our soil is full of microorganisms, right? And if we work the land, we get our hands dirty, and our skin actually absorbs the microorganisms. And then the microorganisms actually improve your gut health and improve your brain health because the gut and brain are connected. So when you're gonna work in a regenerative garden because you stop using the chemicals, then it's definitely gonna have a direct impact on your personal health, on how you show up in your meetings, because a lot of people are in like brain fog. They eat processed food. They are in concrete environment or plastic environment. There's a lot of, even in households, there's a lot of toxic, like even cleaning material and all this stuff that you're just surrounded by it, and it goes into your system and it kills your microorganisms, which again kills the brain gut connection, where now they're actually like we've all heard about the saying, like you have to follow your gut, or there's your gut feeling. Now science is actually proving that it's not just a random saying. There's actually a connection between a healthy gut and the way your brain functions. So the gut really helps you to perform better. So I think that's the biggest way. If you're in an industry that is, let's say, is far from actual landscaping, farming, or doing those things, but if you are in farming, gardening in that space that I'm in, then when you start to do it regeneratively, it's just so much better and easier, both for your business, for your clients. Like I've seen it, like I've helped numerous clients that like before I come to them, they're like, oh, my garden is full of weeds. It's really weighing on my personal life. Like I'm just completely overwhelmed. I don't know where to start. And then I help them. I mentor them how to do it themselves, or I make the whole design for them, and we find a way to execute it, and then it completely shifts their lives. And then they're so excited that I had a few clients that reach back to me, and they say like, oh, I love what you do, and I love what I learned. I want to, well, they say, they then start to create their own business from that experience. Like I had two people, actually three now, follow my Garden of Your Dreams masterclass. It's like a 9-week program. You learn everything to become a regenerative gardener, and they say like I have people that asking me like, well, how do you change your garden? It looks so good. And or they see some designs that they are making on the kitchen table, and now they start their own business. Like I'm also mentoring regenerative entrepreneurs, I call it, how to start their business. Like one of my clients
Nice.
in Portugal, who has been a homesteader for over 7 years, he has like so much knowledge, and he wanted to. He was a videographer, and but he was always behind the screen making video editing. He was sick and tired of it, so he said, "Okay, I want to get into this." But he was like, he needed mentoring, so I helped him, and we've been working for 6 months together now. And last month he had his first 7,000 euro, or which is probably like 8 or 9,000 euro a month as like a starting entrepreneur. So it's very cool. Because now
That's
he's doing it for
amazing.
other people.
No, that's incredible that you said it because there's two things that I feel there. One is this, I feel like that's so on point right now. I've been looking into master gardening classes, into, like Oregon State has like the regenerative farming masters. And I'm a person who I like a good class. I like to go to school. I have an MBA. A master's of
Nice.
science in data science. Anytime I'm
Wow.
interested in something, I want to get the certification. I want to be in the class for it. I literally started my MBA because I was trying to start a business and realized I didn't know what I didn't know. So I switched from my master's of science in data science and was like, let me learn some of this terminology because I am born to be an entrepreneur. Even within my like
Exactly.
corporate job, I am an account executive. So you're somewhat
Wow.
considered the CEO of your territory. You're
Oh
able
yeah.
to do things a little bit more freely. So I think that's super interesting and something I want to know more about that I think my listeners are going to want to know more about, because what Seed in Society does, what we're launching, is called the Connectors Market. And what that is I am the anti-gatekeeper. I am the ultimate connector. I show, like, anything we talk about here, anything they hear, it's like, this is where you go find it. You want to take this masterclass? You want to become a master gardener? Here goes Matthew. Here go, you know, like, this is what I use for a garden bed. Amazing. This is what I use for soil. This is what I use for a microphone, or why I changed it. That is exactly what these connectors are going to be. Literal downloadable resources that you can go to at any time to learn all the things I did to do whatever it is that I'm searching about or learning about. Because I talk about this on another episode, but I love the saying, jack of all trades, master of none, but that's better than being master of one. I am always researching, learning, and I just love to share the information. I just want all the people to have that. So you'll definitely see Matthew in one of my connectors if you want to learn, you know, garden design and how to do this. And I have other people who are really good at, like, hey, I want to grow all the food for my family. And, you know, you want to have more of a community, or this is one-on-one. It's just, I love doing this because I get to meet people who are doing it in real time, and I get to connect them to other people. So that's one. The second thing is, what do you think about foraging? Because that is my other latest, like, venture. So when I see weeds now, I see foraging and I see medicine and I see all these great things that I almost didn't even want to cut my grass for the longest, because I just thought that was so cool. And I'm on 10 acres out here, but about 8 of them are wooded, like heavily wooded. So it's just like a forager's dream if you learn about it. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, if you have any.
Oh yeah, it's a great concept. We actually, early on this year, I did a edible gardening workshop with a specialist from Canada for more like colder climates, and he started out as a forager, and then he realized, wow, all these plants, I can actually also plant them in my garden. So he's like combining garden style property, but it's mostly forageable plants. So it's called the edible garden, you could call it. And yeah, I think it's a great thing, because also, like, what you just said about the weeds, the interesting thing is that weeds, like I explained earlier, they come for a specific reason, to enhance the quality of the soil. So a lot of the, for example, let's look at dandelion. You probably know this dandelion. It's the tooth of the lion. It has a super strong root that goes super deep. It can go up to like 2 to 3 meters, and now you have to help me out and feed. It's probably like times six. I think it's times four.
Everyone on here, it's, you have deep. ChatGPT, you have Google, you can go do some simple conversions. We are global over here, okay? Yes. So you can learn what
to put it in human scale. It goes deeper than the size of a adult human, like almost two times as deep. The root can go, and it find minerals that are lacking in the topsoil. So that's what a dandelion does. Like, it comes to improve the health of the soil, because some minerals might be lacking, or another issue is a curing. And then it finds those minerals really deep. It's like going as deep as it can to find it. Then the roots will pull it up, and it gives it off to the top layer of the soil by the leaves. Like, the leaves will die every year. And it regrows the next year. So the leaves are decomposing and adding minerals to the soil. Well, as it turns out, those minerals that are good for the soil are also really good for you as a human. So, like, dandelions are packed with minerals and vitamins. So it's really good to forage them. And the flowers, you can make like lemonade and stuff with it. So oftentimes the weeds that you forage, or that you even find in nature, are really, really, really good for your health. Yeah.
And they're super tasty. I've heard about that. Yeah, like dandelion tea, or you're even making stuff into poultices or different like tinctures, or the antimicrobial properties of some of these weeds. And I say that in quotations, because something that's considered a weed is just because you decided it was an enemy to whatever crop or whatever food you wanted to grow. And I am so happy you brought up that idea of the gut health and just like the gut body connection. Like your microbiome lives truly in your gut. And what I've read some studies on this as well, is that what we're seeing in, especially in developed nations like the US or even parts of Europe, is that the gut microbiome doesn't have a lot of diversity anymore, because we just eat whatever is processed and the same fruits and the same vegetables and the same stuff that, because it's easy to grow in a mass way, it becomes like your staple diet. And one thing we really want to do here at Seed and Society and on my homestead is grow fascinating fruits. I'm setting up a huge like greenhouse that's going up this year because I want to grow more tropical climate things and grow year round. We're trying to get seeds from stuff that you may not have heard about all the time. Like we're trying kohlrabi this time and just different varieties and hybrids of different heirlooms. And I'm trying to get away from processed because, like you said, I've been working in tech. Sometimes I'm at this computer for 10 hours, 12 hours a day. And I don't even look outside. And I saw how it really started to affect my health. And by all measures of societal success, it's like, oh, but you're making a lot of money. It must be great. And it was like, what is money without health?
How,
and then also, what am I teaching my children? And that's where I feel like homesteading and regenerative farming and food forests, right? Like not just like, hey, I'm just gardening, but like I'm truly trying to be in harmony with nature has just changed how I look at life in general and really helped me to focus on the stuff that's just really important. And this is how we're having this conversation now, because I feel like when you get into this mindset, you want to share it with the world because you know it's really good. You feel it in your gut. Like even now I'm doing ferments all the time. I drink kombucha every day and I'm starting to learn to make my kefir water because it helps your gut microbiome.
Exactly. Yeah, totally. I fully agree. And it's so important, especially in the US, because it's not that I want to talk negatively, because in the US, you actually have some of the best regenerative farmers in the world. At the same time, the whole food supply in the US is in the hands of two companies. So, and they are pretty mostly profit driven. And so it's, they don't necessarily want to do it in harmony with nature, because their profit margins will decrease from that. So that's at the effect of the population, which now in many Western countries, huge amounts of diabetes, cancers, children are getting a cancer at a super early age. What is it? It's leukemia or blood cancer. Like I heard in Texas, they're building a high-rise hospital just to treat children with cancer. Like, can you imagine what has happened to society? And like you said, if this is like purely driven from we just want to make money, and then at the cost of our children or even at the cost of the environment, like that's not a good thing. We need to shift that. And then the paradigm is very dangerous, where you switch to the other side, like, oh, now we don't like money and we don't want to have money. But intrinsically, money is not good or bad. It's a tool. It's a mechanism.
It's a tool. So
when it's the way you use it, just like a knife, you can cook a beautiful meal with it or kill someone with it. So it's the same thing with money.
Absolutely. No, you're saying what I say all the time. Money is neutral in some ways, right? Because that's why I'm really big here on asset-based wealth, like buying land, making sure you actually get resources that can take care of you and your family. Like money just sitting there is useless. If I was in a desert and someone was like, here goes $1 million or here goes a gallon of water, I'm going to take the gallon of water every time. And what's funny is I used to be a teacher. And if I asked my students that, my elementary school students, I even just asked my daughter that, who's 5 years old, water, instantly, if I asked them. When I asked my high school students, half and half. because they understood, because now you've gotten socialized by society enough where you have water technically coming out of your pipe, but you understand that you don't have a lot of needs. So when you hear $1 million, you just think that that'll fix all of your problems. And again, that's where just having that base layer and having that understanding of this is a tool. And really, it's just all of the things you talked about. Like, I used to work at a radiocarbon laboratory, and that's how I really got into the idea of what is bio-based. So what I say for that is it's usually testing if something is actually natural versus like artificial. Or it's also used for like dating trees or archaeology or how old something is. But when you go to a supermarket and it says artificially flavored, that means petroleum. That is literally gas, like the gas that goes in your car going into your food. So it's not negotiable. It shouldn't be.
Because try and drink a gallon of, or try and drink a glass of gas. That's not going to end up well.
What do you think it's doing to your body? And then when we hear about these developed nations that are supposedly the most advanced, like in the West, we're supposedly the best at everything. Rolling my eyes at that. But then you see like the amount of cancer and the amount of these diseases and the cost of healthcare and the fact that a lot of people don't tie that directly to what you're consuming, what is going in your body through food, through whatever this is concerning, because we don't teach that, because that would come at the bottom line of a lot of these corporations. And what I am here for, and what you're here for really, is to challenge that idea and not to demonize anybody, but to make sure people are thinking very critically about what they're feeding themselves, what they're feeding their children, and how this has a very long lasting impact. Because even if you really want to get scientific into it and start studying the molecular biology and what goes into DNA and microplastics and PFAS and all of these forever chemicals that then get passed down to your unborn children and their unborn children, it becomes really critical and pivotal that you do something immediately. And it's not helpful, because we're not here to cast blame. I don't think it's helpful to beat yourself up for what you didn't know. But when you know better, you do better. When you learn about it, you make tiny steps or big steps, however you want to do it, day by day, to get out of that dependency, because convenience usually is costing you a whole lot more than what you think it is you're paying.
Wow, I think you should claim that quote, what you just said. This is very powerful. Like,
well, this is copyrighted is Seed in Society. All rights reserved.
This is great. You can use it. But no, you're spot on. Like, I think it's so important to stress that people understand what it actually means to be living a convenient life, which is fine. And I also believe we don't actually have to reduce our convenience. We just have to be smarter with our resources and use it to our own advantage. And again, like, what I find very important to also stress on what you said is, like, we can't blame anyone. There's no value in blaming, like, because the way actually that our society has formed, that we're so chemically induced, is actually, it came from after the World Wars. Like, after the World Wars, there was they had a lot of chemicals that they used in warfare, like bombs and gases. And the war was over, and they were like, "Oh, we have all these chemicals. What should we do with it?" And at the same time, there was world hunger. There was like famines all over Europe, and they started experimenting with those chemicals to put them on plants. And one of them was nitrogen. I mean, it was already in the 1800s, but other chemicals that they started to experiment with, and all of a sudden they saw, like, oh, plants are growing way faster and the harvest is more. So it was kind of like a genius invention, and it's like, it makes sense. We can completely eradicate world hunger by using those chemicals, which we've pretty much done. Like, there's no more world hunger, and I have to be nuanced, there is in areas with conflicts.
Yeah, but there shouldn't. Like, there's supposedly enough.
No, there shouldn't be. Like, we can solve it.
To, yeah.
Yeah. But actually, we like, pretty much the world hunger has gone down, like, drastically. It's only, again, like, in conflicted areas where it's hard to work with local governments to get food to the right people, or there's just war going on and it's hard. Or climate change is now having a big impact on it as well. But generally, we've solved world hunger because of the chemical industrial way of farming. Now, what people didn't know back at that time, you could still argue if they knew or not, but that we were destroying the soil. We were destroying the soil as we were producing so much food, and we're losing the topsoil, and that's where we are today. Like, if we keep farming and producing food in such way, it's the system is going to collapse. We can't keep doing that, and so it's really important. What you do is you make your own homestead, and I think you should start teaching it to other people as well, that locally or even online.
Yeah, no, I'm in a town with no stoplights. I am very rural out here, so a lot of people are farming. They can teach me quite a bit. But a big thing I think that's very important to point out with that as well, and it's something I've just learned recently. Like I said, when I say I studied this stuff for thousands of hours, when I get interested in something, I like to know all the things about it. And I was taking a course from the Healthy Patch. They are farmers in Australia, and they talk about how the only way your plants and your food can have nutrients is from the soil. So you can be growing this, I don't know, broccoli or whatever, but it's getting those yellow leaves. It's because it's not getting the full nutrients that it needs. And the only way humans get it is by consuming whatever type of vegetation. So if your soil is inherently unhealthy and inherently unnutritious, you're only getting so much nutrition from either your leafy green vegetables or whatever. And that blew my mind. Like, when I tell you, I just learned this like last week. That is how new I take in this information. Great. And I like to re-disseminate it, because that was mind-blowing to me. So now when I'm out there and I'm spending the time to make sure I put worm casings in each hole and garden tone, and that I'm using like the mushroom compost, and because it's like, well, I could get a big harvest, but the whole point of this is to make my family more nutritious and healthy.
Yes.
So if my soil is not healthy, my produce cannot be healthy by basic logic.
I love that, Makeda. Like, I still remember clearly the day when I discovered what you discovered last week. It's probably been like 7 years when I worked with one of the best regenerative farmers in Belgium. And the way he actually explained it is that the roots are just like our stomach, just inside out.
Mm.
So imagine your stomach, but it just turned inside out. And that's how plants function. Like, also in our own gut, it's because of the microorganisms in our gut that we can absorb the food. So if you have a soil that is super low in microorganisms or doesn't have any microorganisms, your plants are going to struggle really hard to absorb all the nutrients. But when you have like an abundance of microorganisms, they are interacting with the plant, and there's actually an exchange happening, just like you could imagine. It's like the stock market, but like with billions and billions of people and interactions, because plants also, what they figured out now, which is also more recent research, is that plants communicate with microorganisms to get specific nutrients and minerals at specific times of the year. Because you probably might have heard that, like, in springtime, we need a lot of plants need a lot of nitrogen. So what do farmers do in industrial farming? In springtime, they spray nitrogen on the plants so the plants grow faster. And it works. But at the same time, it's destroying the balance of the microorganisms who do it naturally. So these microorganisms, when the balance works, just like in nature, plants tell the microorganisms, go get me some nitrogen. And so they come with nitrogen, and then the plants will give them sugar in exchange, like glucose, which is what the plants produce through photosynthesis.
Yeah,
and that's what the microorganisms need.
Yeah, yes, no,
exactly. So yeah, it's brilliant.
This is incredible. I, again, like, I wouldn't even have been able to have necessarily the same conversation with you a week ago. That is how fast, and just to bring it back again to Seed in Society, why I combine AI and tech and everything and say it's, like you said, it's a tool. In the right hands or with the right intentions, I should say, you can get amazing leverage and information, and you can find more people, right? Because I use it. It's not going to teach you everything. It's just a microcosm of everybody and everyone's information. And with bad intentions, you can also do bad things, for lack of a better term. I think everything's a different point on a circular spectrum, but that's another philosophical conversation for another time. But what I say with this is that there's so much information out there, and there's so many great people who are doing this, right? Like, you have known this for years, and now you're doing what you feel like you were put on this earth to do, which is to teach other people how to grow their gardens, how to grow their food, how to understand it, how to make their lives better. And by extension, when, as you know, when your life is better, you want other people's lives to be better. If you're genuinely happy with who you are and what you're doing and you're authentic, I don't see a way where you close off. It's like, how can everyone feel this true joy and experience in life? So with that, Matthew, where can people find you? Where can they go to get access to you? You know, learn about your book, learn about what you do, and follow your journey.
Yeah. So if you want to find out more about me, you can follow me on most social media platforms, like on Instagram. It's more about gardening tips and tricks. On LinkedIn, it's more for business owners that want to have a green impact that also helps them grow their business. Facebook is kind of a mix. You find me on TikTok. And if you want to know more about my masterclass, you can go to my website, www.gardenofyourdreams.com.
Oh, that's a great website.
And if you do forwards, yes, I got the URL 2 years ago. And /, 30-minute training. And then you'll find a free training there that already gets you, like, it's kind of like a taster. I like to say, like, you go to the supermarket and you get something to try. There, I've already put some value together that you can apply immediately in your garden. And if you want to, like, take bigger steps immediately, you can jump on a call with me on Calendly, and we'll see if I can help you further along.
That is awesome. And everyone, of course, all of those links will be down in the show notes. So make sure you check that out. Again, you will also be seeing Matthew most likely in our connectors, because do you want the garden of your dreams? So as always, you can check out what we're doing at seedandsociety.com. Thank you for your time and have a wonderful day.